Hello, and welcome back to the Unmotivated Habits Podcast. My guest today is John Beatty. John is one of the few people to have climbed the tallest mountain on every continent, including Mount Everest. More people have actually orbited in space than have climbed the tallest mountain on every continent. And during his 9-year adventure, he survived avalanches, pulmonary edema, and tribal warfare. He is a worldwide adventurer. He's traveled to 67 countries and given live presentations to nearly 1 million live audience members. He's also the author of 3 books. The newest is called The Warrior Challenge, 8 Quests for Boys to Grow Up with Kindness, Courage, and Grit. We do talk about that a bit on the show. And this was just a really great conversation. So, as usual, if you enjoy the show, please give us a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. Go follow us on Instagram at Unmotivated Habits, on Twitter at You Habits Podcasts, on Facebook as Unmotivated Habits, and then just Google Unmotivated Habits and you'll find me all over the internet. So enjoy the show. All right, John, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I've been looking forward to talking to you for a long time. This is great.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So you've climbed the tallest peak on every continent. And that is obviously an incredible feat. And I have probably 1,000 questions about it, but I'll leave it to a few. When you climbed peak number one, was the plan to summit all 7? And then additionally, do you remember that feeling of you know, summoning number 7? Is it something you can describe?
Okay, so 2 questions for sure there. The first one was Aconcagua, which is in South America. It's the tallest mountain in South America. It's in Argentina, and I did not know that climbing the 7 summits was a thing or a big deal when I went down there. It wasn't until I was at base camp, which is a 3-day walk in with like a 90-pound backpack and hanging out talking with other climbers, that people started like dropping this idea of, hey, you going for the 7, you climbing the 7 mm-hmm. summits, which number is this for you? And I got this idea in my head of, can I do it? Well, then that mountain kicked our butts. We did not summit, failed at it. And that's what gave me that challenge of, not only am I coming back for you, but I'm coming back for all of them.
Yep.
Yep.
So was anyone on that trip on number 7?
Nobody that I was directly involved with. That's one of the earlier, usually in the pattern of climbs. Yeah. And then it usually ends for people with either Mount Everest or Mount Vincent, or Vincent Massif is the technical name for it, which is Antarctica's tallest mountain.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So Everest was my 5th, and my final one was Vincent Massif. And that feeling was a combination of, like, by then I had built enough confidence, built enough skill and emotional endurance that it was more a feeling of like, of course I'm here. I've dreamed about it my entire life. And while the people who I thought would be here with me initially aren't here, and while the scenery looks way different than I thought it would, it wasn't like I was like, holy shit, I made it, like yeah. It was on the early mountains.
Yeah.
This one was more like, this was what I was meant to do. This is what I've been working for all along. I'm like honored and humbled, and I'm having a serious moment of like crybaby up here. Like, yeah. Oh my God, I did it. But yeah. it wasn't surprising.
Isn't that something? You hear that a lot from people that have achieved an amazing feat, whether it be the 7th peak or the Super Bowl or, you know, induction into the Hall of Fame. They say, you know, I envisioned it so many times that it's almost like I've been here before. It's almost like I've done it.
Yes.
So you get that feeling, but it's almost like you were meant to be there. So why is it so surprising that you're there?
It was almost like reliving a dream I had already had, and like, oh, that mountain didn't look the way I thought it would off there in the distance.
Yeah.
So like, that guy's jacket's a different color than I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was really almost like I was already there.
That's so cool. And that actually leads right into my next question. Like, so much went into it. And climbing, as we spoke about before, it's extremely dangerous. It's extremely, extremely strenuous. It requires probably 1,000 times more preparation than anyone from the outside realizes. Can you talk a little bit about all of the small things that people might not realize go into the process that are critical to everything?
I think that 80 to 90% of success on a mountain happens before you ever set foot on the mountain. It's sure. In the training and the preparation. And yes, that includes your physical preparation, which is a massive component. And my like fallback has always been, don't be surprised ever by how much the summit day takes. And so my base level of climbing, let's say it's 3,000 feet that I know I need to climb on the last day of summit day. That's the base level of my climbing, so that I know that whatever else is going on, I can fall back to that.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's like knowing your equipment inside and out so that I'm not wasting energy on figuring out how to put my new crampons on in the moment. Like having that figured out, like it's second nature. Knowing where my camera is sitting in, like on my backpack straps, so that I can easily get to it quickly, get the photo I want, put it back in without wasting any energy. This is the pocket where my trail mix sits. This is where my Clif bars are. This is where my water is. This is where my hot tea is. Being able to access it, like that is trained to that level of fluidity, so that every bit of energy is reserved for where it actually matters, which is staying alive and taking those steps or climbing up those rocks.
Yeah. And it seems like there's a crossover. Is that something that you have taken into other aspects of your life now as a speaker, as a coach, as an author, just the preparedness aspect?
Yeah, man. Somebody could wake me up out of my sleep and be like, point number three of your keynote, you're 20 minutes in, go. I'd be I would give it right there, because unless I have that level of fully embodying and knowing it, I don't have the ability to adapt. And there's a big difference of improvising a speech and like saying, I'm going to get on stage and wing it, versus having your speech so known inside and out that you can read the energy of an audience with confidence and then adapt based on what you knew fully from all angles and then give them what they need in that moment.
Sure. Yeah. And that's crucial to everything in life. So it's such a great thing, preparedness. And you don't want to do it off the top of your head, because people can certainly tell.
Exactly.
And the next one is kind of a two-parter. Obviously, we mentioned that climbing is extremely dangerous and requires a lot of mental acuity. And I wanted to ask, I'll start with the first one. Can you talk a little bit about mindfulness and self-awareness and how that helps you to overcome some of those fears and helps you in those dangerous situations?
Yeah, I didn't know it, but mountaineering for me was learning mindfulness. That's what the whole process was. It was learning how to be so beaten down and like exhausted that I had no choice except to watch my breath and see what's going on in my body and then dig up more strength.
Yeah,
and that's what it all came down to. And that's how I got into yoga. That's how I got into meditation. That's how I got into breath work. And to me, climbing is moving meditation. When it comes to like the actual application of it, it is so crucial in every human interaction to be able to stop our natural response, which is to react, and instead to read that little pause and see what's going on in yourself, and then choose the right response to any given situation, and then act decisively with intentionality. And even if it's like 1/3 of a second that you're able to pause, remove yourself from like your reaction emotion, like, oh, blah, 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 which is what we all like want to do. Like, oh, this thing happened, I'm going to react in this XYZ way. That's my habit, to be able to stop and say, that's not the right way to interact with this person to get to the end result I want. Therefore, I'm going to act in this different way. That's where the juice and joy and magic of life and the leadership of self comes from.
Yeah. And it's funny, just taking that 1 second in life, sometimes it's that quick pause where you realize, oh, wait, maybe they didn't mean that to be offensive. Maybe I don't have to react that way. Maybe I shouldn't get angry at this. You're right. It only takes, 1/3 of a second just to stop and pause and think. And it's a great little habit to get into because it can make all the difference.
I remember leaving a yoga class a couple years ago, and I'm supposed to be like fully zenned out, right? And I was like, I have my like mat in one hand and my bag of stuff in the other. And this random dog runs up to me and starts like jumping up my body and like scratching at me. And there's these people that are across the street and they're like, here, puppy, like that. You know, they're like, I'm like, yeah. Call. And I'd say to them, call your dog. And I'm fully like not in like yoga mode in the least. Like, call your freaking dog and get it off of me. And they say, it's not our dog. It's a random stray that we're trying to save.
Oh my gosh.
And like, that was such a powerful moment of like, what else could be going on in the world? Or what's the story that I'm creating that's not actually the story? I thought they were disrespectful, but actually they're fully compassionate. And here I have an opportunity to save a poor puppy. And I'm like, get the hell off of me.
Yeah. How about that? That's really funny. That's a perfect example of just pausing and realizing, hey, maybe they're doing something for the total right reasons, even if it doesn't seem that way.
Yep. And to have it coupled with like just leaving a yoga class where I'm supposed to be learning and embodying all this stuff, it was like double punch whammy, right?
Well, that's when it hits us, when we're supposed to be in that Zen state.
True.
It's a test.
True.
It's a true test. Going back to something that's a little bit heavier in climbing and in doing what you do, it's kind of unavoidable. You're going to experience trauma. You're going to experience death. I mentioned when we spoke, I actually lost a friend on a mountain on one of our trips. So I know the feeling. How do you not only deal with that trauma and that PTSD, but come out better on the other end and grow from it?
It's a beautiful question. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't know anybody who's been climbing for any good amount of time that hasn't been either near death or known somebody who is one of their friends who has passed away. How do you deal with it? I think it takes more courage to face what's really going on in your heart. And if it's true post-traumatic stress disorder, to learn to not look at the events, but instead to look at your internal messages that create that post-traumatic stress disorder. And for me, when I really dug down through therapy, sitting down with a therapist, it was finding that messages from being a kid and throughout high school, my messages were, I'm not enough to effectuate change. What that looked like in the trauma was, I can't save this guy's life. You know, the real big one that I was up close and personal with, that when people are around me, they die or I detract from them. That was another, like, something I brought from my high school years and early college years from car accidents that I had seen. And those were just unresolved wounds. And I think that all of us have these kind of childhood messages that are in our minds. And how do you heal from it? My experience is learn to be mindful, like we talked in a joking way to start with. But now that like you just asked that, we got real. Be mindful and see that if you're experiencing a genuine symptom of PTSD, that it's your body's way of covering or of trying to deal with that internal message that now has a trauma coupled with it. Because somebody can experience a trauma and they won't experience post-traumatic stress disorder. The disorder comes in when your body gets locked in fight, flight, freeze, or faint mode, and you're always on edge and you have adrenal fatigue because you're adrenaline system is just pumping out as much like save your life stuff as it can, and it gets locked there. And in order to stop that, you've got to go deep into your internal messaging and what has created you as a person. And I think that's such an important process for everybody to go through, even if you haven't gone through a trauma, to know what those toxic messages are that we all have somewhere inside of us, whether it's I'm not enough, or I destroy the things that I'm around, or I'm unlovable, or that I can't effectuate change in the world, any of these common ones or more. You've got to learn what those are for you and learn to replace them. And there are like true methods that skilled practitioners have to replace those beliefs.
Sure. Yeah, I think you touched on it a little bit. All those feelings of the constant adrenaline, the being on edge. Sometimes, I know this was the case for me, you don't even realize it until you talk to somebody about it. Or it was for me, I said, you know, I'd like to talk to someone. I talked to a therapist about it. And then you realize how much you've been holding in at that point.
Yeah.
And the, and you realize the messages you've been telling to yourself, because they'll help you, you know, they'll help pull those out of you. And another thing that I've found useful, I don't know if you've found it to be useful as well, is to not distract yourself from those feelings, but to sit with them and to think about them. With any trauma, I think if you just distract, go watch TV, go do this, I think you're kind of pushing it down. You're just kicking the can down the road. Whereas it might be tough to sit with those thoughts, and you might not be able to do it alone, but it's certainly worth doing.
I think that we distract in three ways. I'm fully with you. I'm glad you brought that up. And I've learned that we will numb it out.
Mm-hmm.
It being the pain will numb the pain away. And that can come in the form of video gaming or television or alcohol or marijuana or any other number of substance, food, the thing that makes us just not cover up the pain essentially, but not heal it. The second one is we tough it out. And guys are especially prone to this, of like grit through it. Grr, it's not there. I'm just going to flex. And that can come across in workaholism, can come across in going to the gym too much, or just like refusing to admit it. And then the last way that we distract is we can nice it out. We can put on a front that we think other people are going to be appreciative of, and make up stories for them and pretend that we're mind readers. And essentially what we're doing is putting on a mask and a front, and being so giving of ourselves, or so like, such the perfect person that others will then give us what we're ultimately seeking, which is love. But that's a corrupted way of going about getting real, true love, because it's asking somebody to love a mask.
Yeah, definitely. Also on that note, for people who are, you know, thinking about getting into this, I know someone personally, that's why I ask. What would you tell someone who's just starting that climbing journey?
Mountaineering or of therapy, or which mountain are we climbing right now? Which climb are we going down?
Sorry, I pivoted. This is the mountaineering side of things.
Okay. I would tell you that you can take mountaineering and climbing as far or as small, as big or as small as you need it to be, and climbing will be there for you. I truly believe that those who are drawn to the climb need to get something out of it. So if it calls to you, and it doesn't call to everybody, some people look at people like you and me and they're like, why the hell would you do that? But I think that it has some level of lesson or healing or of galvanizing, that everyone who's called to it needs to follow that calling. And I would say that if it needs to be a 30-foot rock climb in a gym inside on plastic holds, and that's the thing that, like, that's where your growth is as a person, and that's all you need climbing to be for you, go for it, because it will give you what you need to grow. And if you need to climb the seven summits, or like the 8,000 meter peaks of the world, or set like new ratings, like if you need to be the first 516 rock climber in the world, man, it'll be there for you. Those challenges also exist. And if that's what you know you're being called to do, then make it happen, because that growth will be there that you can then take into other places of your life.
Yeah. And that's perfect. I couldn't have said that better myself. And to tie it all together with the mountaineering and the preparedness and dealing with trauma and all of it, if you could start that at a young age, how great would that be? And I want to talk to you about the Warrior Challenge.
Yeah, cool.
My wife is a teacher. She's virtually teaching. So I have the great pleasure of getting to listen to these young kids talk to her all day. And it is so cute and so funny. But I know that young boys, they go off and they're cute one day, and then they go off in all sorts of different directions, because there isn't that... the guidance really isn't there that once existed. Can you tell me about what you're doing with the Warrior Challenge?
That's the right line. The guidance isn't there that once existed. Pre-industrial age, there were rites of passages in almost every culture. And it was this clear set of challenges, or one singular challenge, that had a guide. And the guide said, or the whole culture said, when you follow what the guide says or does, then you will be a man in our culture. and we threw out the baby with the bathwater because those used to be things like throwing a kid against a real-life lion or pushing him out of a tree with vines tied to his legs or like sending him off into the desert for 6 months to fend for himself. And if you could live through those things, you're a man in our culture. And like we got rid of them because we were killing and abusing our kids. But what we also threw away were a clear set of values and a set of challenges and tasks that if you accomplish these, like we embrace you as a warrior in our world. And I brought that positive side of it back with this book, The Warrior Challenge. So I put across 8 quests that are taught by real life. I call them warriors, but they're just dudes who did badass things. Like you're Danny Way jumping over the Great Wall of China on a skateboard in this book. You're dirt road or you're off-road racing in Baja, Mexico, defining what your values are. You're learning self-awareness. You're setting boundaries as you escape from a communist country. You're rock climbing in Yosemite up a 3,000 foot peak to learn like what are the traits in others that you want to surround yourself with friends.
Yeah.
So all these 8 traits are coupled with the coolest adventure stories ever presented as challenges for readers. Like if you can live up to these traits that these awesome dudes lived up to, then you too will become a warrior. And so that's the arc of the book.
I love that. I really do. We got to get that out to as many people as possible. I think it's going to be a great thing.
Thanks, man. I sure hope so too.
So, where can people find the book? Where can people find you? Where can they contact you?
Great question. Thank you. The book is easiest way to buy it is to go to Amazon, type in The Warrior Challenge. Go there right now if you're listening. Type in The Warrior Challenge. The subtitle is 8 Quests for Boys to Grow Up with Kindness, Courage, and Grit. It's a bright red cover. That's the one you're going for. Buy one for your nephew, for your son, your grandson, or any of the boys that you know. Gift it for Christmas. To the families that have kids, this is the thing that changes young men's lives. I promise you this will positively change the trajectory of that young man's life. If you'd like to go a little bit deeper, then my website is johnbeede.com, johnbeede.com. And that's where you can kind of like watch my mountaineering documentaries, take any of my self-improvement courses, or follow along with my future adventures. And of course, I'm on social media everywhere at John Beede.
John, I threw a bunch of questions at you and you handled them so well. And I appreciate you so much for coming on. It was truly an honor. I hope we can do this again. Really, just thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's a real pleasure to be here with you, Mike.